Vayishlach is one of the few places where the Ramban opens with an intro. He does, we spoke earlier in the year when we began learning Ramban al Torah, but what you learn from methodologically, from the fact that Ramban wrote introductions to every Sefer, and that speaks to his global approach, and he's trying to figure out what Bereishis is about, what Vayikra about, what Shmos about, and consistently works through the Pasuk by Pasuk after developing an introduction. But he rarely will have an introduction to a parsha, what he calls a seder, a sedra. But here he does. And we'll open with that, and then we'll see together several specific instances going forward. Nichtava parsha azos. Here before, beginning with any pasuk. Nichtava parsha azos. This parsha was written, this parsha being not all of Vayishlach necessarily, but at the very least, the opening of Vayishlach and Yaakov's encounter with Esav. Lehodia ki hitzila kadosh baruch ez avdo uga'alo miyav chazak mimeno. What is this parsha coming to tell me? Before you even get to the answer, it's worth just considering the question. Right? Obviously, he's working off of one of the most fundamental gemaras in understanding Tanakh, the gemara in Megillah. The vast majority of historical events that happened, even to the people who we hear a lot about, relatively speaking, Tanakh, the vast majority of the events in the lives of Avraham and Yosef and Moshe don't appear in the Tanakh. Torah has only given us a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of happened in their lives, and the Torah is selecting those things which are Hutzur Chaladaros. And the Rabbag does that consistently throughout his Perush Anach. He'll stop everyone every couple of prakim and say, okay, what are all the lessons that we learned over the last couple of prakim? What are all the toalios, the usefulnesses? What were we supposed to have gained from the last couple of prakim? Rabban says, let's want to know here. Why is this parsha in Chumash? Not why did it have to happen to Yaakov Avinu, but why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu need to tell us about it? Why do we need to know? Number one, We should see the Rebbe Shlom took care of Yaakov is Neved Hashem, and he was in a situation where there was an aggressor, Yad Chazak Imenu, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu carried him through. Kadosh Baruch Hu made sure to put the pieces into place to enable Yaakov to survive. And Lamdenu owed, what else? Shehu lo batach betzid kaso, v'hishtadil v'hatzal b'chol yichaltam. He, on Yaakov's side, you see what Yaakov's response was. That he was a botech b'akadosh baruch hu, but was not botech in his own tzidkas. So here he's referring to a gemara that he, both Rashi and Ramban quote further on. The year Yaakov mod vayetzilo, Gemara believe in brachas, says, well, why is he so afraid? He has avtacha from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him more than once, I'm going to take care of you, I'm going to protect you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him that before he left Eretz Canaan originally. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him that when he was ready at Beis Lavan, before he leaves to come home. And the Gemara says that he was concerned, Shema Yigur Machet. He was concerned that maybe he doesn't deserve it. Maybe he did a chet, and he doesn't deserve HaKadosh Baruch Hu should take care of him, even though he was a big tzaddik. But on Rosh Hashanah side, we see HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Hanhaga is to take care of the Avdi Hashem, and we see that the approach of an Eved Hashem is to not assume that such an incredible tzaddik. And therefore, to do his shadlos. To do his shadlos. And then he says, in addition to seeing about Yaakov, about how HaKadosh Baruch Hu deals with Yaakov and how Yaakov responds, and those are models for us to emulate in our attempt to be like Yaakov, in our attempt to grow into being Avdei Hashem, is also a remez l'doros. What do you mean a remez l'doros? A remez for all generations. Ki kol ha'era la'avinu im Esav achiv ye'era lanu tamid im b'nei Esav. Because that which happened between Yaakov and Esav plays itself out repeatedly, cycles through over the course of Jewish history between Bnei Yisrael and Bnei Esav. V'ro'i lanu le'echoz b'darko shel tzadik. And he said, interestingly, part of what you gain by understanding the history repeats itself is to model yourself after those who have been successful with this sort of situation in the past. Which is an interesting twist. He's talking here, this idea of Remez Doris is the idea that we've heard from Rabban many times, the idea of Masa Avos Simul Banim. And he's saying, part of myself, what's the point of myself as Simul Banim? What's the point of it? Number one is to appreciate when you see things happening that this isn't random. And you can see the Yad Hashem, and as we're going to see as we go into particular Pesukim, you can see the Yad Hashem in Jewish history, not only in the good things, but even in the bad things. Because you see, this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has been guiding. Part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is playing out the things they're already put into place and they're already predicted in the Chumash. Now, it's just like Ha'azinu, there are parts of Chumash that are expressly predictions about the future. Chumash Bereishis is an implicit prediction about the future. It's setting up the archetype of models that are going to play themselves out over the course of Jewish history. But it's not just to know and to recognize, we've seen this before, but also to know, I can look to, if I think I've seen this before, let's see how the others dealt with it. We should model ourselves, not just passively, reactively, this is happening to us, the way things happen to others, but I can respond to it proactively, the way the others respond to it. He says, here specifically, we ought to adopt the approach of the tzaddik of Yaakov Avinu. We ought to take his model of preparing, of noticing what's coming up, to roas hanolad, not to wait for things to happen to us, but to be proactive, to see a situation coming, and plan in advance, and to plan in three different ways. L'tfila, l'doron, u'lahatzala, k'derech mochama, l'vroch l'inatzil. Sometimes there's a spiritual preparation of reaching out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and then there's the friendly types of practical hishtadlos, like doron, lack of standing in presence, diplomacy. And then there are the adversarial types of physical, practical hishtadlus, milchama, or now Ramban seems to understand that sometimes running away, levroch l'hinatzel, could also be an aspect of milchama. Milchama means adversarial hishtadlus. Adversarial may be I'm going to counter aggression with aggression, I'll fight back, or it may be I'll run away. But as opposed to diplomatic, positive, friendly, doron. All these three pieces. And they said, this is not my chiddush. You look in the Chachmei HaMedrash already points this out repeatedly. So now let's take a look and see how the Rambam plays this out, this idea, at least some of the ways in which he plays it out. We'll begin with Pasuk Dalet. El Esav Achiv Arza Seir. Right. Yaakov, here's a detail we tend to ignore the names and dates and the dates and places, the information that we often tend to sort of filter out when we're learning Pesukim and Chumash. I say places, times, whatever, blah, you know, like a lot of people that learn Gemara, they sort of filter out who said what. The information is there for a reason. So what's the significance of the Esav is in Seir? We know that he's in Seir. So Rabban says, yeah, because here's Eretz Yisrael. I'm going to do a very poor job of drawing it. Here's the Kinneret. Right. Here's Yom Melech. Right. Here's the Yarden. And here's obviously the Avogadol, the Mediterranean. He's coming from Haran, which is somewhere around here. He's coming back south. Down to Eretz Israel. Where is Seir? Where is Eretz Edom? Very clever. Right. Edom is around here. Right. A couple hundred years later, when the Jews come out of Mitzrayim, they're in the desert here. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that they also get punished by having to stay in the desert for close to four decades. Moving around here, and then finally, in the end of Chumash Bamidbar, in the 40th year, Ozan HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, now it's time to get moving. And after they've been in a holding pattern in this desert southeast of Eretz Yisrael for decades, all of a sudden they're covering hundreds of miles over the course of maybe a couple of months. They go work all the way up. Here's, I think in this order, if I remember correctly, is Ammon, Moab, and Edom. I think north to fast. They pass by Edom. They pass by Edom and Ammon and Moab. And here's the Yabok River. North of the Yabok is the area that had been already conquered by Sichon and Og, who were Canaanite strongmen, Canaanite kings. They work their way up. The Jews do not engage militarily with the southern half of what we would call nowadays Jordan, Ammon and Moab and Edom, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu says you're not allowed to fight with them. But they do engage successfully militarily with Sichon and Og, up in the northern half we would call Jordan. And that corresponds loosely to what we would call, that's Eivah Yarden, and that part of that corresponds to what we would call the Golan Heights. As it says in the Chumash. So Edom is down here. Edom is down south, is to the east of the southern part of Eretz Israel, which is what the Pasuk says. Right? So he says, one second. He says, he's coming back from Haran, and he's reaching out proactively to interact with Esav, who is in Seir. Rabban says, "Bavur hayos negev Eretz Israel ayde Edom." Well, the south of Eretz Israel is opposite Edom. Right? Is the south of Eretz Israel is on the west side of that border, to the west of Edom. The other Yoshev Eretz HaNegev. Now he's coming from the north, but so Rabban is bothered. What are you bothering with Edom for?
Live here.
So, are you looking for trouble? So Rabban is bothered by the Akasha. Rabban knew the map. So he's bothered. Like, well, the Pasuk says he's in Seir. So if he's already in Seir, so let this sleeping bear lie. But Rabban says, no, but he wants to be here. Yaakov wants to be right here. Yaakov wants to be in the Negev, in the south of Eretz Yisrael. After all, that's where his father is. He's coming back after 2 decades to Eretz Yisrael. He's not going to live in Tzfat. He's going to move back to Negev to be near Yitzchak Avinu. Maybe he won't be in his tent, his big family now, but he's going to be near Yitzchak. He's starting to see Yitzchak. He's either going to be might travel through Edom this way, or at least he's going to be going down this way, but he's going to be near Edom. Edom is not far from Beersheba. The Yaakov Kamenetsky in his Sefer on Chumash Emes Yaakov, he has a theme that he develops over the course of different passages in Chumash Bereishis that Beersheba was in many ways the central ear ha'avos. Beersheba, after Chumash Bereishis, Beersheba never has the sort of centrality that it has in Bereishis. Later on, things move north to Surin Yerushalayim and Chevron. But he says, but during Tekuvos Avos, that way Be'er Sheva was very central to the lives of the Avos. That's what Ramban is already saying. Of course, Yaakov's coming back to Negev. Yaakov's coming back to Negev. And in the 1500s, the Jews who were moving to Eretz Yisrael all moving to Tzfat, even earlier than that. In the 1200s, 1300s, they're almost all moving to the north. Almost all moving to the Galil, in and around Tzfat. And 4,000 years ago, Yaakov, the Avraham took Yaakov. It was centered around Be'er Sheva. That's where Yaakov's going. So that's why he's Al Kain Pachad, Ula Yishma Esav. He's worried, if I don't prepare in advance, I can't just ignore this. I'm going to show up. I'm going to be in Esav's neighborhood. So if he just hears that I showed up and I haven't laid the groundwork for building a relationship going forward, then it's hard to know how it's gonna play out. Therefore, hekdim l'shloach elav malachim la'artzo, and that's why he decided he ought to send messengers, preempt this, and he should start the conversation first. But interestingly, Rabban says, sounds like al pi pshuto, we understand that. But it sounds like he's saying, "Bal derech Rash, Chazal saw this as perhaps not a positive thing." The clue was Yaakov was thinking. The question is that positive or negative? Kvar tefasuhu hachacham malzeh. Said, but the Chachmei Medrash critique him for this. I'm a Bereishis Rabba. Bereishis Rabba is a very ancient Medrash. Bereishis Rabba goes back to the Tanam, the early Amoraim, I believe. Machzik ba'azni akalev. What are you grabbing the ears of the dog for? There's an unfriendly dog. If the dog attacks you, you're going to have to do something. But you don't go, if you know that that dog is not a friendly dog, so don't go over and poke him. Let sleeping dogs lie. That's the mashal of Chazal. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, lo darko haya me'aleich. He was going, that's what it says, Esau was holeich lo darko. He's busy with his thing. Well, what are you doing? Ha'isa mishalecha, slow. You get him started for. It was a bad call. You shouldn't have engaged him because there's a fair chance that if you wouldn't have said, you would have said nothing, he would have said nothing, you wouldn't have had to engage in the first place. You're creating trouble for yourself. The al dati gam ze yirmos, says Ramban. And why is this important? Why is this significant to us? Why is this relevant? He says, because that measure is not only a comment on what was going on 3,500, 4,000 years ago. That measure is also a comment that was going on since. Gam ze yirmos, ki anachnu hischalnu nifilasenu b'yad adam. He says, we've sometimes have begun our own downfall. Sometimes we began our own subjugation to Edom. Ki malche b'yisheni bo b'brisim aromim. Over the course of the Bayesheni, the latter half of the Bayesheni, the Jews had sovereignty. Right? Hanukkah is coming. Right? So we know that from the death of Yoshiyahu, a couple of decades before the Churban Bayis Rishon, until the Nes of Hanukkah, around the middle of the Bayesheni, the Jewish people did not have sovereignty in Eretz Yisrael. They were living in Eretz Yisrael for the first half of the Bayesheni period. They had the right to be. They were authorized by Persia, and then even when Alexander conquered the Persian Empire, they were still authorized to be there. They increasingly lost their religious freedom. But they weren't in charge. We were not in charge until the Nes of Hanukkah. The Nes of Hanukkah was a combination of HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us political freedom. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us second Commonwealth in Eretz Yisrael, Hakamas HaMedina, at the time of the Nes of Hanukkah, and that enabled us to be able to practice Yadus properly, to run the Beis HaMikdash properly, to do mitzvahs properly and proudly without having to worry about Shema. So, but what happens afterwards? So over the course of the latter part of the Bayesheni period, there's a slow degradation. The early days, Mamas, the Malchai Beis Chash, early Malchai Beis Chash Benoi, Mamas, Yehuda and his brother, they were great tzaddikim, great leaders, great tzaddikim. But over the generations, it's Pochus Vaholik. And Mara tells a story of Hurkan and Aristobul, a couple of generations later, descendants, it sounds like, of the original Chashmonam, they veered so far from being tzaddikim. And Mamash, there were two brothers who were fighting over who's going to be in charge. One is inside, and one is laying siege to him from the outside. And the one on the outside invites the Romans in and asks for trouble. He says, Mamash, we did it to ourselves. We brought them in. We brought them in. And the footnote, he points out that Rav Shavel, footnote 7, points out that in Sefer Chashmonaim, they write that Yehuda Amakvi, Yehuda ben Matisyo, reached out to Rome as a sovereign nation to develop diplomatic relationships, to be Koris Bris. And perhaps that's what the Ramban is talking about. Now, that's an interesting question. To what extent should a sovereign state of Israel be reaching out to, what should our stance be? How much should we try to proactively reach out to Umos HaOlam, and to what extent should we be trying to just duck and do our own thing and avoid entanglements, to go back to Jefferson, was it? To avoid entanglements abroad. There's a question that they said that's part of what's a whole new look, whole new perspective, whole new way of looking at the Psukim. He says you're looking at Yaakov and Esav, you're looking at how the Jewish people as a nation should be dealing with the Esav nations that surround us. Umehem shebo beroma. There were those who reached out to Rome. He quotes at the bottom. And Rabban talks about in Bichul Kosai, but Agrippa Samelach, who was one of the last of the tzaddikim among the Jewish kings of the Bayesheni period, but even he, Chazal was under the critique of certain things that were inappropriate. So he went on a diplomatic mission to Rome, and Rabban seems to say that maybe this Bren Medrasim, that was a bad call. That was, in retrospect, that was a bad call. We would have done better to try to be more independent, to keep our head down and do our own thing and not get involved. The Zeh Muzkar B'Divrei Rabboseinu U'Mefursam B'Svarim. That's number one. Question? Yeah.
So, doesn't it have a good concern that if you just kind of pass by Edom without announcing, it's
Yeah, so I guess it means that something has to be weighed. And what's the likelihood that it's going to... You have to make a cost-benefit analysis. You have to roll Sanola. So we have two options here. We could, this is what I used yesterday in terms of the heroes, Bishalas Maisa. You have to think at all your options. On the one hand, we could try to be passive, or we could try to be proactive. So there's a value to being proactive, that if he's going to engage us, we can set the stage and set the tone, and maybe it'll work out more positively. We can communicate, you know, set things up in a better way. On the other hand, maybe you have to ask yourself, what are the chances that if we don't act, he'll act? And what are the chances that we don't act, we'll just, nothing will happen? So you have to weigh that. And there also, you get the impression, at least some approaches in Medrash, and maybe part of what Rambam's driving also, not just that he reached out, but he reached out in a very subservient way. Stressing the Abdu Chayakov, as opposed to just sort of reaching out as an equal. That may be part of what the Rambam is driving at also. Yeah, Yossi.
Don't we assume that Yaakov was a very intelligent person who, at the time, probably would have made the decision he thought was best for time?
Oh, he certainly wasn't a thought. I mean, yeah, he's a great
psychic. You should say that Yaakov just kind of like made his decision, but he didn't actually, but he wasn't making...
I'm sorry if I'm not being clear. I don't think Rambam is saying that the Chachmei Medrash see Yaakov's being thoughtless and just sort of acting without thinking, but certainly uses judgment, but we think it was a mistake. Not that it was judgmentless, but that it was a mistaken judgment. It was a bad call. He thought it through, but it seems to us from reading the Chumash that the Chumash is, that Rambam is saying, you look at Midrash Chazal, Chazal seemed to see, reading the Chumash, that the critique of Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov made a call, but it was a bad call. That's a Bechlal reminder. When you have to make a judgment call, as opposed to not thinking at all, and B, you have to try to make the right judgment call. And then the Chazal say here, Rambam said the Chazal say, and here Yaakov made the wrong call. Not that he was thoughtless, but it was the wrong call.
I'm not saying thoughtless, but it seems strange to say
that Yaakov would make a mistake.
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, hindsight is 20/20, but it seems strange to be critiquing, you know, Yaakov Avinu for a decision at the time. You know,
So the Ramban's meta point here may help with that. In other words, the recognition that all this is also, there's a whole other layer of Remez Ladoros, may explain the point of critiquing is to point out, you're right, Yaakov at the time may have made the best decision he could make. In hindsight, we see that it wasn't the best call. And the Yaakov Avinu didn't. This is not about Chazal not seeing judgment in Yaakov Avinu. What they're pointing at is that we can learn from Yaakov's, that the Torah records it, so we can learn to do differently next time. And then to be aware of the fact that it's not always the best thing, and maybe sometimes be the best thing to reach out proactively. There may be situations when it's best to engage less. And you have to really weigh that carefully. And we have to try our best to hopefully. A Jewish leader in any generation has to do his best to try to figure out, you know, what's the right, to recognize that this shekel needs to be made. Will we succeed? We hope. Yeah. Probably in the tens. But we know about his family, and there probably are Avada, and maybe other people who have joined him.
What are the chances that Lisa hears about
So you're saying that's why that's what the Ramban is saying. That's what he should have said. What are the chances that it's actually going to...
Right?
He was very wealthy. That's true. He was very wealthy. And certainly once they got to Eretz Canaan, they definitely made their presence felt. And certainly by the time the episode of Shechem rolls around, they definitely were no longer anonymous. But you're right. At the beginning, that might be... You're right. That may be part of what the Ramban was driving at. Like, you could have been incognito. Maybe not. This is probably this is part of the shekel of Yaakov Avinu, and Rabban is saying he thought it through. He made a call, but Chazal say maybe that wasn't the right call. And the reason why it's important for us to recognize that we're not being Dan Yaakov Avinu. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's business. That's not our business. But it could be he made the best decision one could have made given all the data that he had. But the point of realizing in hindsight. That it wasn't the best call is for us. Yeah, one more question, then we'll go on to Pasuk Tes.
About what the Ramban says, but we said that the reason why Yaakov was scared was because he thought he might have done in the Vera.
Yeah.
Right, but if Hashem promised him, like, regardless of whether or not he did in the Vera, isn't that like the basis?
That's a great question. Such a good question, maybe we should call him Moshe. Because Rabbi Moshe Ben Maimon asked that, like, Machaven Takasha, the Rambam asks. Rambam asked that question in the Hagdama to Pirush HaMishnayos. Raz was here yesterday, quoting one part of the Hagdama to Pirush HaMishnayos, about the different parts of Torah Shalpeh. So right next to that, the adjacent segment of the Hagdama to Pirush HaMishnayos, he talks about Nevuah. And the Ramban talks, the Rambam talks about the idea that Kadosh Baruch Hu will not renege on a positive nevuah, even if we no longer deserve it. The negative nevuah could be chozer, but a nevuah l'tovah is ain't a chozeres. The Rambam writes, what about Yaakov Avinu? If that's really true, so why was he worried Shem and Yigur Machet? Maybe you were a chote, even if you were a chote, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you aftachan. It's a nevuah l'tovah, ain't a chozeres. So the Rambam answers that the only reason, really nevuah should be chozeres. That was nevuah, but if you change for better or for worse, it would make sense that if a person changed for better or for worse, that the response should change as well. The reason why Ramban says that's the rule. The rule should be nevuah is chazeres, l'tova, l'ra, whatever it is, as appropriate as a person changes. He says the reason why there's a special exception that nevuah l'tova is eino chazeres is because otherwise it gets into a larger discussion. We don't have time for now. But it's in the context of Rambam explaining how you certify a Navi. The Rambam points out that certification as a Navi is necessary. It's a halachic certification. There are halachas about Naviim. There's a chiyuv to listen to the Navi. Elav tishmon. And they have to be, they're hilchas Navi. And the halachas that we have to follow if we have the schus to interact with the Navi. So Rambam says, obviously it's a halachic concept and it has to be definable. And something that has come up in over the last couple of centuries also. Sometimes people will come and say they're Mashiach and claim that they're Eliyahu Navi. And sooner or later, Mashiach will actually show up and tell us that he's Mashiach. And Eliyahu Navi will actually show up and tell us he's Eliyahu Navi. And the question is, how do you know if you're dealing with the real McCoy or not? Right? There was a Jew 2,000 years ago who may have claimed, who historians are not sure whether he ever came and claimed that he was Mashiach. But he certainly has grown quite a following. And there was a Jew... There was a Jew 400 years ago or so, by the name of Shabtai Tzvi, who developed quite a following, both among Jews and non-Jews, and they were Mashiach Sheker. That Shaila has come up probably over 100 times in Jewish history, to figure out whether to Paskin, that Rambam, the last two Prakim Hilchas in Mishnah Torah, or Hilchas Mashiach, the last two Prakim Hilchas Malachah. How do you know? That's Mamash Shaila Halachah Maisa. As someone claims to be Mashiach. If he's real, we should be reacting in one way. If he's not real, we should react in a different way. How do you know? And communities have been torn apart over this. Teiman, the reason why the Teimanim are so incredibly attached to the Rambam, Kafach writes about this, is because the Rambam saved their community spiritually. Because there was one of the sort of like the second tier Mashiach Sheker was this fellow who came to Asfahan, I think, and came to Teiman and convinced. There was a time of a very intense religious persecution by the local government, and this false messiah played on their fears and insecurities, and a lot of them were really taken in. And some of them reached out to Rambam and said, like, what do we do? Like, how do we figure this one out? And he wrote them a Igeres Teiman, or maybe we should say Igeres Teiman, in which he deals with, like, Ikarimu, Yichazes Ikarimuna, and he deals with, like, how do you know if someone's Mashiach or not? So, Shaila Lamaisa, he mamash saved their community. Supposedly, at the time, they had such hakaras atov that they added the Rambam's name into Kaddish. I assume they stopped doing that after Rambam passed away. But for those couple of decades, the hakaras atov was incredible. He mamash saved the entire community from spiritual kilayon. So it's a real shiloh. But one of the ideas the Rambam develops in talking about how you certify a Navi, so it's a larger conversation. The Rambam says you do not certify a Navi by miracles and tricks. They are neither necessary nor sufficient. You don't have to do any nisim in order to be, quote, certified as Navi. And more importantly, doing nisim doesn't help. If you read Mark Twain's Connecticut Yankee and King Arthur's Court, the Rambam lived several centuries beforehand, but makes essentially that point. The fact that someone can do tricks, it might be a real nace, or it might be that he's very good at doing tricks. Tricks don't prove that you're for real. Rambam says, you know, it says, look at the Chumash, and look at the Gemara, and you'll see that what does prove that you're for real is entirely accurate, detailed predictions of the future that are cross-checked later. The way you certify an Avi is he comes to the Beis Din. If he seems, not only seems like the sort of person who's eligible, he seems to be an unusual tzaddik, an unusual talmid chacham, an unusually wise person, an unusual baal midos. And then we say, okay, he seems to have he has the eligibility, and he thinks that he's an Avi. So then we say, okay, give us a wait until next time you get a prediction from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We want to hear every last detail. And everything gets recorded, and then we wait until the appointed time arrives, and we see, did every single detail come true or not? Rambam says, if he missed a couple of details, then he's Navi Shekhar. And he gets the capital punishment, comes in Navi Shekhar. If he got every single detail right, then we say, okay, interesting, try again. And we do it a few times. And if several times over, a Navi can, in detail, with 100% accuracy, predict the future, they say, that's a Navi Emes. That's what it says in the Chumash. That's a Navi Emes. It says in the Chumash, we don't care about Osis Mofsim, and Navi Shekhar might show up and do Osis Mofsim. There were people who were very taken in by Yeshu's Osas Mofsim. There were people who were very taken in by Shabtai Tzvi's Osas Mofsim. But the Zray says in the Chumash that the Navi Shekhar might come into Osas Mofsim. That shouldn't impress us. Can you predict the future or not? If he's violating halacha, if he's promising abrogation halacha, we know for sure he's a Navi Shekhar. So it's in that context, Rambam says, that's why Nevuah Tova Zayn HaChazeres. If every Nevuah was changeable, then there would be no way to effectively certify an Avi. Because some of the details don't come out, maybe it's because we didn't deserve it. Maybe because we changed. So there has to be some type of Nevuah that there's a promise that it won't change. So why should HaKadosh Baruch Hu say it should be Nevuah L'ra? Chesed Hashem, Midas HaChesed dictates that the one that should be fixed is a Nevuah Tova. What's a Nevuah Tova? It's a freebie if we no longer deserve it. But says the Rambam, that's only in a case where a Nevuah is meant to be shared with other people. That's the rule, and a Nevuah is meant to be shared with other people, when it's Latovah Zayin HaChazer, and that enables certification. But Yaakov's Nevuah was not a Niv. It wasn't meant to be shared with others. It was just for himself. No, we hear about it because it's important for us to understand. But at the time, he didn't, Yaakov as a Navi, in other words, often Nevi'im, or Navi may be Lashon Nivs Fasayim. Nevi'im typically were God Nevuah and were meant to share with others. Lamar. But every once in a while, there was Nevuah that was just for the Navi himself, his own spiritual edification, his own spiritual enlightenment, understanding, but not to share with anyone else. That's a different type of Nevuah. And that type of Nevuah, we may hear about it later, but Yaakov was not Mitzuvah to share with anyone. That may be, by the way, what was going on with Rivka and Yitzhak. It may have been a private Nevuah that Rivka was told that she wasn't authorized to share with others, which is part of what creates a dynamic, this complicated dynamic in Rivka and Yitzhak, because she knows what needs to happen, but she's not authorized to share it with her husband, who's an incredible tzaddik and a Navi, but Kadosh Baruch Hu had not chosen to give him that particular Nevuah. So coming back here, that's why, very good question, as the Rambam explains, that's why the Nevuah, even though it was a Nevuah Latova, Yaakov was concerned. The Gemara Bracha says, Shema Yigur Machet, if I don't deserve it, since it was a private Nevuah, it may well be rescinded if I don't deserve it. Now let's turn our attention to Pasuk Tes. Moving on in the Torah's description of the interactions between Yaakov and Esav, Yaakov's preparations for his interaction with Esav. Yaakov says one of his preparations is we're going to split the camp in half. We're going to go into two different zones, two different areas, and that way in Yavo, if Esav is going to come and attack one machane, the other one will be saved. What strikes you about that? It never struck me until I looked at Ramban. But the simplest kasha is... Okay, strength in numbers, good. Strength in numbers, good. Even that's a fancy. You're asking a good, very good fancy question. More questions. Not even alternatives. Just understanding what Yaakov actually said. Yeah.
He's suddenly willing to sacrifice half his family.
He's suddenly willing to sacrifice half his family. Maybe. I'm not sure if it's a sacrifice.
Dividing up them in half. And two will, half of it will get attacked by something that half will run.
Look, Im Yavo, otherwise, he's not making them more vulnerable. No one's more vulnerable than we were before. If we stay together, Yaakov will attack all of us. If we split in half, each of us has a 50% chance of being ignored by Esav. I don't think anyone's more vulnerable. except for the strength of numbers argument, which is perhaps significant. Yeah. Right, that's a good point. That's a good hour, yeah.
My cousin is not
divided. How do you divide? Yeah, but I think that's a corollary to Dov's question. I mean, no one's being put at greater danger because we have no idea if Esav's going to go, let's say, north or south. So no one's in greater danger by being in the north group or the south group, as opposed to just being in the group. It's not as though one group is more precarious.
But Yaakov knows that Esav's coming from
the east. And he may have put one in the north and one in the south. I don't know if there was necessarily an advanced group and a behind group. Maybe it's just been side to side. And we'll see which way Esav turns at the crossroads. But at least we're ducking. But Ramban also points out, one second, for Hayaha Machan initial afflate, the other one will be saved. Going back to your point about numbers, who says they'll be saved? You so sure? I mean, maybe he'll go for one group and then go for the other group. Are we going to run so fast? So Rabban says, Al derech hapshat, Omar zeh be'ulai. Al pipshuto, this was an ulai. It was a maybe. Maybe the other one will be saved. In other words, once again, Kedarku, Ramban is not asking his kasha, just answering it. Obviously, his question was, how are you so sure? And the answer is, he wasn't saying he's sure. He's just saying, even if he hits one, there's still a chance that the other one will survive. Maybe the other one will survive. Number one, why might the other one survive? Because if he attacks one group, it'll give the other group time to scatter and flee. Or maybe after Esav's bloodlust may cool down after one encounter. He may not be interested in continuing the hunt. Not for sure, but maybe. Or it's another opportunity for some sort of Hesiyat HaShemai, for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to save us. Okay. V'chein Amru B'Breishas Rabbah. Here's a very fascinating practical takeaway from this. L'medecha Torah Derech Eretz, L'yoniach, the Torah is teaching you Derech Eretz. I don't think Derech Eretz here means in the sense of being polite to others. This is a broader definition of Derech Eretz, a proper conduct, a wise way to lead your material life, to lead the gashas parts of your life in a prudent fashion. Don't put all your money in one corner. We would say don't put all your eggs in one basket. You don't invest, even if you think that you have a really hot stock tip, if you want to invest 10% of your money in that, maybe. But you don't put all of your money into a single investment. That's just not smart. That's really not smart. You try to diversify. So diversification, that message of diversification, it's a Bereishis Rabbah from almost 2,000 years ago. Don't put all your money in one corner. Invest some money here, invest some money there. The Gemara, I think in Chum talks about that, about diversification of assets, to talk about putting some in liquid, keeping some of it liquid, some of it is invested in what we would call stocks or business, or starting a business. Some of it is invested in real estate. So Rabban points out, the Gemara gives that advice, and the Bereishis Rabbah sees that as Yaakov's advice. It is not just about life and death situations. This is part of wisdom in life, is to understand that it's wise to diversify, and don't put all your eggs in one basket. Huh? That's right. You're going to go to college, so some people are very convinced they know exactly what they want to do, career-wise. Okay, sometimes that's a good idea, but often it's good to keep your options open and to use the first year in college to take lots of different types of courses. If there's a good array of core requirements, sometimes that helps. Anyways, you try a little psychology, try a little economics, you try some biology, and try different things and see what appeals to you. Well, you don't have to really lock yourself in when you're 5 years old that you need to be a pediatric cardiologist. No. No, it's sometimes worth keeping your options open. And that's another example of this. But then Rabban, and he quotes Rashi calls Soya Machna Nishal Afleta Ki Ilachemimo. Rashi says Al Karko, the other Machna will definitely be saved because I'm going to go to war. I'll give me more chance to fight back. The Rabban points, yeah, Rashi's making the assumption in reading the pasuk that Vayom Achanishal Fleita means it will be saved. And Rashi is bothered by that. That's what he says. It must be means that he's giving himself this position gives Yaakov better military chances. Rabbi says, Mechatesi. Mechatesi means maybe. He's not saying he's sure that's going to help, but it's increasing our chances of success. Again, for all the different reasons that he gave. And if it's an Ulai, then again, it feeds into the Bracious Rabbah's idea that this is an example of not putting all your eggs in one basket. And then he goes on to talk about another line that Rashi quotes. Hiskin asmal shoshadvarim letfila ledoron ulemilchama. Right? He prepares, this is what he already quoted in the introduction to Vayishlach, the three different preparations. They are the three different plans. Plan A, Plan B, Plan C. Or not three different plans, three different pieces of the strategy. Ra'isi bin Medrash. Ne'asa, what did he do? Ziyanam bifnim, v'hilbisham begadim levanim mechutz. He armed everyone underneath, but has them wear white clothing on the outside. Now, what problem is the Medrash dealing with? The problem the Medrash is dealing with, presumably, the kasha the Medrash is answering, is how can it be Doron and Muhammad at the same time? And you can send gifts ahead, but if we understand what we said before, that Doron doesn't mean gifts. Doron means a diplomatic approach. You're trying to be friendly. So, yeah, but then you're going to, if everyone's ready for Mulchama, I understand. So you send presents, so now he thinks, you know, we can sit down and negotiate, and you show up armed to the teeth. So the presents are going to sort of lose their oomph if you show up looking so aggressive. So the Medrash says, showed up dressed very nicely, showed up dressed in business clothing, right, sit down and negotiate, and have a suda together, we can celebrate our brotherhood, but concealed carry. Underneath the suit, there was a holster. Zinamuf, then they have the weapons on the inside, if they need them, they'll pull them out, but they don't have to make it obvious. Their first initial presentation was a friendly one, and if he's friendly in response, he never even needs to know that we were armed and underneath. But if Rechamal Tzlan, the friendly approach doesn't work, so then, and that ultimately the friendly approach did work, and they had a very pleasant interaction, and Rabbi Medrash would say, Esav never even saw that Yaakov and Reuven and Yehuda and Yisachar and Zevulun and Gad all were packing fire underneath, because it was underneath nice clothing. They looked very very pleasant and peaceful. And the Begadim Levanim is a reference to nowadays. A white flag, for the last couple of centuries, a white flag has been a sign of coming in peace or truce or surrender. I don't know if that's what it meant then also. That's Begadim Levanim means like a sign of, in the military sense of Begadim Levanim, or just means Begadim Levanim means nice clothing. It came dressed, the sort of clothing you would come to Suuda, not the sort of clothing you would wear on a battlefield. The Hiskin Atzmo Shal Shadvarim, he was prepared for all three, the Chain Iker. And the Rabban thinks that's the Pashup Shat. That's the Pashup Shat. That's the Pashup Shat. And Rav Shavel points down the bottom, that means that supports Rashi's approach. Hayanach Machanish Lefleita means we're ready for Milchama. The Medrash talks about the Milchama. The Pesukim don't really talk about Milchama. So, but if you understand that the Doron feel and Milchama means even while they're being friendly, they're ready for Milchama also. That's what Rashi is saying. If he goes after one, we're going to hit him from behind. We're going to hit him from the side. We're going to get him. We're going to attack back if we need to. The Kavana Bezeh. This is once again. So what does this tell us? What does this mean? What's the point? Where is this headed? Ki Yaakov Yodea Shein Zaro Kulo Nofel Biad Esav. This is not only good advice for your investments and for your career planning, but this is also a larger remez, once again, about Jewish history. Yaakov knows that this is demonstrative of the fact that not all of Bnei Yisrael will fall into the hands of an Esav at any one time. Now he's doing the remez in Rashi. Here, again, Rabbi Ridge has started by saying, Al-Derech Pratz Ulai, maybe it'll work out. Right? But then he says, Rashi says, no, no, Ulai, we're going to fight back, it's going to work. He says, you know what the remez is in Bahaya Machanish Lefleta? That definitely the other one will be Nishar, because that's the way it's going to work in the future. That sometimes a section of Klal Yisrael, many Jews may be persecuted, many Jews may be killed. But the Tzibur, the corporate entity, the nation of Klal Yisrael, will survive. And that we know. For sure. Not Ulai. For sure. Even when an Esav is attacking one part of Yaakov, but the other part of Yaakov will invariably survive. The Gamze Yirmos. Shalom Yigzur Aleinu B'nei Esav L'chos HaShemenu. B'nei Esav will never succeed in entirely wiping us out. Yasu Ra'osu B'kitzaseinu. B'kitzasa Ratzol Shalom. There have been many times in Jewish history when we were persecuted terribly in certain places in the world. Melech Echad Me'em Gozer Baratol M'moneinu Al Gufeinu. One king in one country may decree against our money, may decree against our persons, against our lives. But a different country will pick us up. 1492, the Jews are out of Spain, but Holland picks them up. And Poland picks them up. And there was a time when the Jews had to run from Germany in the 1300s, but the Russians were able to escape to Spain. There was a time, obviously, in our own times, the most perhaps the most dramatic of all, when Jews were being slaughtered by the millions in Eastern Europe by the Nazis in Achshavam. But it wasn't just Melech, the what was his language? It wasn't just Melech Acher, Merachim B'Mekamo. It was the Melech Machalach and Rachim on us in our own place, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu opened up Eretz Yisrael for us and gave us back Eretz Yisrael in the way that we hadn't had in over 2,000 years since Agrippas HaMelech. That's, in a sense, the most shining of all. Tezayin Kislev is upon us next week. Tezayin Kislev is the day that Rav describes, very famous Rasha, very, very famous Rasha, and the Kol Dodi Dofik. He said in the 50s he said this, Kolshkin after 67. He said in the 50s, That Jews better not be asleep at the wheel, the way in Shir Hashirim, the girl is asleep and the boy comes knocking, and the boy she's been yearning for, but now she's in bed and blah, and she's lazy, and she's get out of bed, she's gonna have to wash up again, and all of a sudden knocking stops, and she realizes, Gavalt, what I do, and she runs to the door, and she missed her opportunity, and he's gone. The dote is gone. The Rav says, we better not be the Raya who misses the knocking on the door. And he told us it's six different knocks. That I hear, the Rav says, judgment, I hear HaKadosh Baruch Hu knocking in so many different ways. And he said, when the gavel came down on Tezai and Kislev, on the 29th of November, 1947, and the United Nations ratified, against all odds, that there should be a Jewish state in Eretz Yisrael, he said, if you were watching with eyes of flesh and blood, you saw the chairman's hand holding the gavel. He said, but I heard HaKadosh Baruch Hu bringing the gavel down. That was mamish. HaKadosh Baruch Hu called Dodi Dofik. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu was mamish knocking. How could you not notice? That's what Rambam is saying. That's what the Chumash is telling us. They're all throughout. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaYamach HaNeshul HaFleitah. That's the way it will be. It will be for sure. And so the Bereishis Rabbah says that. Yavo Esav El Machna Achaz V'Yiko Eil Achenu Shebedarom. We have a machanishal fleita, elachanisha begola. The Jews in this area are being persecuted. The Jews over there, okay. The Jews, Rome began to tighten the vise on Eretz Yisrael, but there already was a community in Bavel. Yehuda Nasi had sent ahead Rav and Shmuel to build Torah in Bavel, and they flourished under the Persians for centuries. By the time things were dying out there, the community, the Jewish communities in Europe, were ready to pick up the baton. And Rishonim grow in Europe, in North Africa. And that's the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu has been guiding our history. And he says, it's not only Chazal commenting about their time, Re'u ki gam l'doros tirmoz zos ha'parsha. This too, he's yet another example that his measures pointed out, that there's a remez l'doros, and the Ramban lived this. Ramban lived this. You know the Ramban had an incredibly difficult situations, political situation I deal with in Spain. The Ramban was called upon, was challenged to debate by Pablo Cristiani, Yimach Shemo, was a Jew who had wantonly become Mashumad for personal gain, went over to Christianity for personal gain, and ultimately challenges the Jews to a debate. And there were several such debates between Mashumadim and Rishonim. The Ramban had somewhat more freedom of speech than the Baal HaTosfos did in their debates. That says the Ramban was in a position of strength when he discussed in advance with the name of the king of Aragon. But in Chazer, he won the debates, but he won the battle, lost the war. He was successful in the debates, but the pressure and the persecution increased afterwards despite that. And the ultimate Ramban flees Spain and moves to Eretz Israel. In part because of Chibas Eretz Israel, and in part because it was becoming increasingly difficult to live in Spain. Rabban was talking about the events that he had seen happen over the last couple of decades, the last couple of centuries. And that's what the Ramban sees in the Pasuk Yizayin as well. A short Ramban Pasuk Yizayin. When Yaakov is giving the Malachim instructions about how to best organize the presentation of the gift, he says, don't bring it all at once, space it out. Right? So sometimes you need space in order just for the aesthetic. Anyone who's involved in layout of a publication, you know that white space is incredibly important. And sometimes you don't realize that how important white space is. You just sort of jam the words on the page. It doesn't look right. White space is spacing things out. It makes, will make it that much more attractive. But the Ramban points out, as Rashi does, that it was more than just making it more attractive, which itself would have been valuable. It was to make it look perhaps more attractive because it's spaced out, and also to make it more satisfying. It gives a different impression. There's more and more and more and more. Let's just see two, after that brief break, let's just see two more plays around. Ramban plays at this key idea, specifically seeing the Hatzalah of Klal Yisrael, even in difficult times, as has played out in Jewish history. Merum was already in the parsha of Yaakov and Esav. So here you have in Pasuk Yitzayin, and you have in Pasuk Chaf Vav. Pasuk Yitzayin, he says, what's the remez? Revach tasimu ben eder le'eder. Why do we need to know that the details of Yaakov's work on the presentation? There's a remez. Amar Yaakov, this is poetic. Ribono shel olam, yutzaros bos al bonai lo savi osan zu achar zu. Ela harvach lemitzaroseh. There should be space. There've been difficult times, and there've been times of rest in between. Asa remez shiyu amisim va'arnuniyos shiyu b'bnei esa mizaro. That it hasn't been unmitigated persecution over the stepping back and looking at Jewish history over the from 30,000 feet, zooming out, there have been an oscillation. There were times that were difficult, and there were times of times when Klal Yisrael collectively could catch their breath. There were terrible times in Spain, and there were golden ages in Spain. And finally, Pasuk Chavav, the wrestling match between Yaakov and the Yish, between Yaakov and the Malach, that Chazal understands the Sorosh al Esav. Vayar ki lo yacholo. The Malach sees he's not able to overcome him. But he did wound him in the hip. So Ramban's first unspoken question is, well, why wasn't he able to overcome him? He was clearly in a very good position. He was able to severely damage his hip. That's a pretty powerful position. So how come he wasn't able to pin him? How come he wasn't able to totally overcome him? Ramban says, Malachav gibore koch osei devaro. That's what Malachim are. They're osei devaro. They're very powerful, gibore koch, but they're osei devaro. They do exactly as they're told. They do what devar Hashem was. Alkeim lo yachol lo ha-malach laziko. That's why Malach couldn't do more. Kilo hursha, rakim asha asim malach kavri reichel. The Malach was only authorized and empowered to do partial damage to the Kaf Yerech, to the hip. So that's all he was able to do. By Yarki Lo Yacholo. He saw, Malach realizes that he's not been given the capability to totally overpower Yaakov Avinu. couldn't totally undermine him. The Amar Breishis Rabbah. And once again, the Breishis Rabbah. Noga bechol atzadikim shasin lios mimenu. It wasn't just Yaakov Avinu, but this is Al Derech Remez going to play itself out in tzadikim throughout the generations. Ze doro shel shman. That's not every single tzadik in all generations. The Breishis Rabbah said that's a reference to generations of religious persecution, to generations of shmad, when Jews are being hunted and Jews are being killed and there are pogroms. What does that mean? That's Adkan Divrei HaMedrash. So Ramban explains. This whole episode of Yaakov and the Malach is a remez for future generations. There will be times, there'll be a dar, or maybe multiple dars over the course of Jewish history, when there will be so over, when the Esau will be in such a powerful position over us, be close to totally wiping us out. The man says, think about the generation of when you had most of the Asar Rugei Malchus. That's a generation of Hadrian. The persecution, the religious persecution in the days of Rabbi Akiva, the Chaverav, that was after the Bar Kokhba revolt. Bar Kokhba revolt was in the 130s. Right? Bar Kokhba, Rabbi Akiva thought that he was Mashiach. Gemara Sanhedrin says Rabbi Akiva thought that Machlokes Rabbi Akiva the Chachamim, whether the Nevuah of Yirmiyahu, Od Shivim Shana Af Kod, Yirmiyahu had Nevuah that 7 years would come back for Bayesheni. Gemara Megillah talks about the details of that. Rabbi Akiva held, and the Gemara Sanhedrin and Perek Chelek records this, Rabbi Akiva thought that applied not only to the Gullus after the Bayis Rishon, but also to the Gullus after Bayis Sheni. Rabbi Akiva thought, 7 years Mashiach will come. The other Chacham said, absolutely not. You'll be dead pushing daisies long before, you will have died and be buried long before Mashiach comes, because they're working from a tradition that Mashiach wouldn't come before the year 4000, which is 240. In the secular calendar, which was 100 years after the Bar Kokhba revolt. So the other Chacham says, no way that Bar Kokhba is Mashiach. Rabbi Akiva held Bar Kokhba is Mashiach. Some suggest that the death of the 24,000 Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva may be the result of their being the Hezdernicks. If their Rebbe held that Bar Kokhba is Mashiach, it's likely Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva formed the backbone of Bar Kokhba's army. Not hard to imagine. And Bar Kokhba actually was remarkably successful for a couple of years. He actually did establish temporarily sovereign government of sorts in Eretz Yisrael. He struck his own coins. And the amount of damage he did to the Roman army was unprecedented, literally. There were multiple legions. Look in the Roman annals. The multiple legions. Legions are the largest unit of the Roman army. There were multiple legions that ultimately get called in to suppress the revolt of Bar Kokhba, which was unprecedented given the relative size of Bar Kokhba's and how small Bar Kokhba's group was, relatively speaking, and how ill-armed they were compared to other armies. The remark unprecedented. The number of legions that were brought in and the fact that I believe it's the 14th legion that seems to have been entirely destroyed by Bar Kokhba's army. Because, of course, they wouldn't say that they were destroyed, but they never appear. I think it's the 14th legion that never appears again in the Roman annals. So, they didn't have the courage, they didn't have the midas emes that Jewish people have. Tanakh is full of our shortcomings as well as our successes. But they didn't say it, but they didn't make up a story they still had the 14th legion, because that was just not true. So, the Bar Kokhba world was for a couple of years remarkably successful, but ultimately fails. Ultimately fails, and the bloodbath, the backlash of the Romans was brutal, and the Gemara talks about how many millions of people were killed, and not only was there brutal mass killings of Jews. In addition to that, the Romans realized that what they had tried 7 years earlier hadn't worked. They had tried their usual. They had at that point already a recipe for empire building, for how you assimilate another province into the pan-Roman culture of the empire. You introduce a few of your gods, and they sort of had a system for their social engineering for how to introduce a couple of pieces into the culture, and that would more or less bring the new people on board as being part of identifying as a part of the Roman Empire. They realized they hadn't worked with the Jews. They realized the Jews had some X factor that they had not dealt with the first time in the year 70 with the fall of the Bais Sheni. They realized the X factor was Torah Mitzvahs. And that's probably why after the Bar Kochava revolt, the 140s and forward, is incredible religious persecution. And that's when you have all the Shailas about Sakan Nefashas and Yar Vayavar, and that's when you have the Midrashim describe that this one's being crucified for wearing tefillin, this one is for shaking a lulav, and so on and so forth. And that's what Rabban says. That dar, mamish. And that was before before there were major Torah establishments in Bavel. At that point, Torah was really centered around Eretz Yisrael. This is during the period of the Tanaim. He says, wow, that's the door of Yehuda ben Bava and his Chaverim. Kemosha Amru, Rechia Bar Abba. Rechia Bar Abba is an Amora, the second generation Amora, Talmud of Yechim. So he lives a couple of, a century or two after this. Im Yomer Li Adam Tenav Shal Kedush Shmo Shal Kodesh Baruch Hu Nino Sin. If they'll tell me, you know, give up your life for HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows, convert to another religion or give up life, I'll give up my life. Ulvachi Arguni Miyad. If they're going to kill me right away, the great Rechia said, "I don't know that I could withstand the torture, the extended torture that they suffered a couple of generations earlier." Right, we know those stories. They would bring metal pellets, malabdim osam buur, and heat them in the fire, and stick these 600, 700, 1,000 degree little balls of metal under their armpits. A cruel death. And we know about that. Rabbi Akiva was combed to death. Right? They burned him at the stake as slowly as they could. That's the story. They wrap him in Sefer Torah and they stick the wet cotton in between the Sefer Torah and his heart, and that way he'll burn alive longer. He'll die more slowly, so that way he could suffer more. It was like brutal. Chibra Abba said, "I don't know that I could survive that. I don't know that I could be omed in that type of design." A couple of generations after the Ramban, that was going to start happening in Spain, in his own home country. The Inquisition was torturous. Torture. Yesh doros acherim. Sha'asimanu kezeh v'yosef ramizeh. Rabban says, I know there already have been other generations where there was equivalent torture, and sometimes even worse torture. Rachman Salam, we've seen her in our own century. With the Nazis, imach shaman v'zichram. The hakol savalnu v'ayim. This seems so depressing. Right? Yet Rabban says, and with this we close, 1 second. This is all merumas in Parshat Vayishlach. This is all v'yarkin l'yacholo. There was incredible, incredible, incredible tzara, but benetzach Yisrael. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu kept us going. Even when things seemed so tenuous, there have been bad times in Jewish history, there have been some really, 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 really awful times. But even those times, we survived. Sometimes it looked like we wouldn't, but we always survived. And this is already merumas in 4,000 years ago. In Yaakov and Sarah Shal Esav. So this is actually so we close where we started before. What the Ramban, remember, he said we're going to see in this parasha Ramazim, and part of it is to recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you can see the Ad Hashem that I said before, even in the bad times. Not only HaKadosh Baruch Hu saves us, and we have a Medina Sistrala, we see an unbelievable Nisim. Even one can develop the eye to. At the same time, obviously, that when people are suffering, first and foremost is to empathize and to try to begin to understand what that pain was like. And at the same time to also recognize the human suffering and recognize that I still see HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan playing itself out. This is part of Vayakir Le'Yacholo. The Malach saw that he couldn't totally overcome Yaakov, even though he was able to hit him in the hip. That's a pretty severe injury. He was in a very good position, but still, lo yachalo. He couldn't because the Malach wasn't authorized to do that, and Malach Kendu was not authorized to do. And no, says the Ramban, it's going to be true for the human Anashim throughout Jewish history. They won't be authorized to go all the way. They will never be authorized to destroy Klal Yisrael. We may suffer. We may suffer greatly. But Klal Yisrael, the Tzibur, as the Kadosh Baruch Hu has a plan for us that is eternal. Hakol Savalnu Va'avar Aleinu, we took it and we suffered through it, but we survived. It passed over us, but we're still here. Kemo Sheramat Vayavo Yaakov Shalem. All is said and done, the episode ends, Yaakov is whole again. And that's what's happened throughout Jewish history. Terrible, terrible stuff, often bad, sometimes horrific. But Klal Yisrael rebuilds. That's the Kadosh Baruch Hu's plan for us. Kadosh Baruch Hu will not allow it to be otherwise. You can see Yad Hashem in the good times. You can see Yad Hashem in the bad times as well. Okay. There's more to talk about, but this is certainly a major, major, major approach to Ramban.